you for joining Soho Insider for this special program focused on community oncology, where we will have a monthly discussion on relevant topics in the community setting. We will have a recording of the talk available on sohoinsider.com. Attendees may ask questions by using the Q&A. And it's my great privilege to honor and welcome Dr. Tarek Graf from Mission Cancer Blood in Des Moines, who's also director of their clinical research program and probably one of the pioneers for how to roll out bispecifics and cellular therapy into community practices. And so today she'll be discussing that exact topic, both CAR-Ts and bispecific in the community setting. So I'll use the chat function if anything comes up during the talk. You're happy to reach out to me. And again, I just welcome you, Dr. Graf, and let you take it over.
Thanks, Loretta. So I have spoken a lot over the last 3 years on, building a bispecific program in the community oncology setting, something very near and dear to my heart. But now, as everything advances, it's time to kind of talk about moving CAR T cell therapies in the community setting. So I'm excited to be here. Here are my disclosures. Okay, so for the last 3.5 years, I've been talking about this bispecific bonanza, and now it's kind of time to talk about the CAR T cartel and really what the role is for community oncology. Is it more as a bridge? Is it, adjunct sort of, helper in that? Or is it, hey, let's just do it all ourselves? And I think that's different for different institutions. So just a few things to think about. Only 15% of second line large B-cell lymphoma patients received CAR T cell therapy. Based on the information we are seeing here below. So if you look at this is based on claims data. If you look at this, 100% of the patients who are eligible, quote unquote, for CAR T, okay? So 34% started at a CAR T site and 66% started, in the community. So of those 66 second line patients, needing CAR T, 46% remained at non-CAR T site. So they were not referred. So something happened in there. Did the primary physician make the decision? Did the patient not want to go? So of that 66%, only 20% were actually referred to the CAR T site. But what's even more shocking is only 8% of that 20 actually got treated with CAR T. So where is the bottleneck? What's going on in that situation? Just thinking about that, how do we expand CAR T through community academic partnership? This is a scalable model to increase access, maintain safety, and deliver high quality cellular therapy. So, how do we bridge the gap? I always say let community help in some way. So, what can community do? Is it just helping with apheresis, lymphodepletion, maybe an earlier return, as we've seen presented at ASCO with Lysocell? There's now a 14-day return that patients do not have to remain at the CAR T site if they're doing well and have met certain requirements. They can be returned to their primary oncologist sooner. So that helps a little bit, right? For those patients who don't want to be away, say for 30 days, 28 days, be able to come back and sleep in their own beds, perhaps may increase those CAR T referral numbers. But what else can we do? Why partnership matters. So CAR T demand is rapidly increasing, and not just in non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, but in myeloma too. And autoimmune, right? It's not just about our cancers anymore. So academic centers are going to face capacity constraints, and community oncology extends reach without compromising safety in a number of situations. I think shared protocols and escalation pathways are really key. So what does a community academic partnership model look like? So for academic centers, there's protocol development, complex escalation, and trial leadership. In community centers, there's patient identification, outpatient delivery, and early monitoring. So this is not just a one-way highway, right? This is a bi-directional communication and rapid transfer agreement. So basically, we have to learn to really work together because we need to make sure those referral numbers are improving. So in terms of safety data, with bispecifics, right, we've talked for a long time now about CRS and ICANS and are they predictable and what can we do? But we're learning that in a lot of cases, especially with our bispecifics, which have paved the way, that CRS and ICANS are quote unquote predictable, right? So majority of CRS is grade 1 through 2 across all the approved products. ICANS rates, fortunately, with our NHL products are low and typically reversible. And early recognition and standardized management reduces severity. And I think as those of us who've been doing bispecifics, especially outpatient, for a long time now, you know, the pattern is there, right? The ancillary staff, everybody on board typically knows what to look for and how to intervene in a timely manner, you know, increasing safety, increasing awareness. So again, proving outpatient success. What does the data show? So step-up dosing with bispecifics has reduced severe CRS. Many CAR T and bispecific therapies now start outpatient, and hospital at home and, you know, remote patient monitoring further enhance safety. So we're seeing more companies that are coming out with different monitoring devices, some good, some questionable. But I think as we move towards the future, there's going to be benefit to doing this. There's even some centers that get, you know, reimbursed differently, you know, because they use RPMs. And so I think trying to figure out the most ideal situation with an RPM is something that we're all looking, you know, to figure out the most optimized process. So I always think that bispecific antibodies are kind of like a proof of concept, you know, initially restricted to inpatient and academic settings, now safely delivered outpatient and community oncology, and the same toxicity profile drivers, right? CRS, ICANS, timing dependent monitoring, when these things occur. And as we've learned with bispecifics, they occur differently for different products. And it's really no different with CAR T, right? You don't have to use the CAR T product that necessarily has the, you know, higher risk of CRS and ICANS. Pick one that's more user-friendly in the outpatient or the community setting, you know, to get your feet wet. So why is community oncology ready? Maybe I'm biased. You know, I feel that we've done a really good job with bispecifics. At least, you know, we've really made headway. So I think that experienced oncology and infusion teams in the community can do this. There's a familiarity with the CRS and ICANS management via the bispecifics. 24/7 coverage and escalation pathways in a number of our sites exist. And again, for some community sites, that means integration with academic partners. Perhaps there's a hybrid model, especially if you're at a larger academic institution and you sit at a community site, you know, related to that institution, or you're part of, say, US Oncology, and some sites are doing this and some sites are not. So there is a partnership that can be formed. Benefits to patients, right? This is the driver, you know. Getting care closer to home, faster access to life-saving therapy, reducing the travel and caregiver burden, and improved continuity with trusted care teams. I feel like a lot of the times that patients aren't referred is maybe not because the doctor doesn't want to refer them, but that patients are just saying no. I mean, I know that I can think of three CAR T patients in the last year that probably should have gone on. Well, they absolutely should have gone on for CAR T therapy, but they wouldn't because they drove their spouse that had another cancer. They, you know, I'm in Iowa, right? So 90 minutes from here is just farm, 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 farm. And, you know, harvest is a big deal. That's their livelihood. So having to take off 30 days to, you know, to do this is not easy. So being able to, you know, deliver this closer in a community setting, you know, really increases, I think, not only the benefits to the patients in terms of treating their, you know, aggressive cancer, but just, you know, letting them, you know, continue to live and to continue to preserve quality of life. Benefits to health systems and payers. You know, we can have expanded capacity without duplicating infrastructure, reduce inpatient utilization, lower total cost of care, and have a sustainable, scalable delivery model. So from bottleneck to scalable network, in my mind, this is what this looks like, right? You have your community doc and you have your academician. And, you know, academic only CAR T, that's a problem. That's a bottleneck problem waiting to happen, right? Community academic CAR T, distributed scalable care, shared responsibility. So the future is partnership, not siloed delivery. So the community bispecific experience, I say the bridge to CAR T. So bispecific antibodies safely delivered outpatient in the community oncology groups is going on now, and more programs are starting, like Dr. Nastipil was speaking about, right? It's so every day I know that I have helped now 20, gosh, maybe I don't even know, 20, 25 sites fully onboard bispecific programs. And they've been doing this now for, you know, 2+ years. And so, and more are starting all the time. And I get emails all the time. So the desire and the, you know, the excitement to do this is there. So again, knowing the same immune-mediated toxicities, knowing about CRS and ICANS, what to watch for, having established workflows for monitoring escalation and transfer, and real-world experience de-risks CAR T expansion. So these are just some of the reported, CRS and ICANS numbers for, some of our commonly used bispecifics, right? Three of which are in non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and just an example using teclistamab. And I did use my friend Chad to put the table together. They were nice to do that for me. And so, again, these vary a little bit by the phase of the trial, frontline, second line, things like that, because there's trials going on as well. But these are the first reported numbers, in the literature looking at these drugs that when they first got approved. So when you look at these numbers, and highlighting kind of the grade three or higher CRS numbers are, single digits, if very little at all, as well as the any grade ICANS. So those are the things that scare us, right? So really, really low percentages. Well, now when you look at the CAR T products, so you have axi-cel, liso-cel, ide-cel, and cilta-cel for myeloma. Again, look at the grade three CRS and ICANS numbers, and you can kind of decide, okay, this product is not that different than a bispecific. Does it mean that every drug should be used in the community? Not right away. But when looking at liso-cel and looking at the grade three or higher, events, that's fairly manageable, as well as the others. Really, if you know how to manage CRS and neurotoxicity, and you've done, again, do I think a site that's done just one bispecific should start doing CAR T tomorrow? No, but if you're a site that, say, has done 20 plus bispecifics outpatient, has a great, SOP, you know how to monitor, you know how to, recognize those toxicities, I don't think that, a majority of these agents would necessarily be a heavy lift. But again, it's just what your experience level is and what you feel comfortable with. So again, kind of really reiterating why bispecific experience matters for CAR T. The timing of toxicity is predictable with step of dosing. You know when you need to be on high alert, right? Most events occur early and are low grade. Community teams already manage these when you're doing them at your centers. And so CAR T kind of just becomes a scale up, but not a leap. So from academic choke point to community network. So the traditional model is academic only CAR T, limited slots and long wait times, geographic and socioeconomic barriers, inpatient bed and staffing constraints. So what does the future model look like? So I see a community academic CAR T network, right? Community sites deliver outpatient and hybrid CAR T. Academic centers serve as escalation and innovation hubs, kind of a hub and spoke model potentially. Distributed care increases access, speed, and equity, and safely preserved through shared protocols and transfer pathways. So the take-home message is CAR T is no longer confined to a single care setting. Community oncologists already manage CRS and ICANS safely. Bispecifics experience has paved the way, and community academic partnership is the scalable future of cellular therapy. The question is no longer, quote unquote, if CAR T can be delivered in the community, but how quickly we can expand access responsibly. Here's my vision of the near future.
Thanks, Dr. Graham. I think, again, you probably have the best insight in terms of how do you transition from successfully administering bispecifics to considering treatment of CAR T. And I really appreciate you sharing that insight. And since we don't have any questions in the Q&A box, I'm going to take this opportunity to maybe ask you some operational questions, if that's okay.
Yeah.
What do you think are sort of the base level key criteria you would need to be able to successfully administer bispecifics in the community and then start talking about CAR T as an option? Because you mentioned it's not appropriate for a center that's done one bispecific, but where is that threshold? What do you think would set you up so that we can, as you mentioned, responsibly deliver this therapy in a community setting?
So I think that's a great question. And, our sites are not all the same. And when I had this discussion, it's the barriers, pharma will sometimes ask me, what's the greatest barrier for bispecifics even? And I'm like, well, God, there's not just one, because for your site, like, you have more experience than, anyone I know in lymphoma. You can do this easily, but if you don't have an ancillary team, right? I always say, for me, I think the number one thing is having I call it a bispecific team, but really it's evolving. It really should be a cellular therapy team, right? Because this is not just going to be bispecifics. But if you don't have a team, and that can look very different, that could be three physicians, two nurses, and six APPs. That could be one dedicated nurse and one APP and one physician if your volume is low when you first start. But you have to have people that are, say, in it to win it with you. You know, they're really passionate and driven because they're going to take ownership of these patients, especially if you're doing this on an outpatient basis, because you're going to have to do the education and, you know, really become friends with the patient and the caregiver. And there's going to need to be constant communication and monitoring calls and clear communication pathway. That's so important so that you know if that patient has a fever and what to do and what the intervention is going to be. I think we took so much of our knowledge with bispecifics. We took that from CAR T, and it's different because you can keep a patient with grade one CRS at home. I mean, I've had patients with fevers golfing. So it's not somebody who has to come in. I've even managed grade two at home, depending on what's going on. I'm not selling that everyone should do that, but these are not necessarily levels of CRS that need to be brought in. But then you have to also have the ability to bring those patients in. So number one, kind of to summarize, you have to have a team. You've got to have individuals that will look different at different sites that are going to be responsible and truly dependable, you know, to take care of this patient or, you know, the patients. And then, you know, a plan in terms of, okay, if the patient calls at 2 a.m., am I going to open up my clinic? Is there a day hospital, or are they going to have to go to the hospital? And there becomes the next barrier is that some sites have all the things, right? They have a intelligent, motivated physician champion. They have a bispecific team, but they don't have a relationship with the hospital system. And if we can predict 100% that patients could be seen outpatient and every CRS event's going to occur before, you know, 5 o'clock, it's not an issue, but we don't necessarily know that. So if you don't have a hospital partner, at least on, you know, emergency backup, that's going to be difficult. Even for outpatient, even for CAR, it's going to be difficult. You still have to have a hospital partner. As much as we don't want to necessarily use them, we have to have them. So, you know, physician champion, bispecific team, and at least some type of relationship with the hospital system so that you know that your patient will be safely cared for, you know, if that is the ultimate path and they need a bed for a reason. And again, this is a 3-hour conversation in and of itself of really how to build that. But I think those are the basic blocks and the basic features that are so important to doing that.
I think those are such valuable pieces of information. I'm going to now turn to the Q&A. There's a
Oh, yeah.
question here. Can you share tips for CRS monitoring protocol for administering bispecifics in the outpatient setting in a community cancer center?
I am blessed, as you know, Loretta, that I have a site with a bunch of people who I guess are as crazy as I am, thank God. But when we started this 3.5 years ago, I don't know how I convinced them to do this, but we actually monitor the patients every 6 hours. We are becoming a little bit more lenient with that in certain situations, but as a rule, that's how we started, right? Because like I said, it was like having your first baby and you needed to like hang over them and make sure they were still breathing. And it scared the hell out of the patients, but it was just a little bit, we were a little crazy. But I think until you become comfortable, especially when you're treating outpatient, and if you can, I think it's a great idea to be able to do. You don't necessarily want to rely on the patient to call if they have a fever, because those of you on, you know that your patients who present with neutropenic fever may have a temp of 103 for 3 days and they're not calling because they think it's going to just get better. You don't want to do that with a bispecific patient. So rather than rely on patients to call us, we set up strict monitoring times so the patient and the caregiver knew that we were going to be calling them. So every patient had to have medical equipment. In most cases, they could afford it. If not, we tried to provide it. If it was trial, we got it covered. If not, we had other services that we could, you know, provide certain pieces. But they all had to have a thermometer, a blood pressure cuff, a pulse ox, and then something that could do heart rate, which most people have. And we would call, and we would call 2 times during the day, so working hours, one call before bed and one call in the morning, early morning. to make sure to check in. And by doing that, even if the patient wasn't calling us with events in between, we were capturing things soon enough that we were able to intervene and in, 90% of cases, keep those patients at home. And I know it sounds daunting and it sounds like, oh my God, I can't do that. But you're not going to start with five patients the same week the first time you're doing this, right? You're going to start slow and you're going to amp up. And so I think that is really the key, is just start with one, see how it goes. You'll be nervous the whole time. That is totally normal. You'll probably use Tosi, even though you don't have to, and that's okay too. But that is the best way, to do it. And really, I mean, even though it probably needs to be updated, if you do go to the consensus guideline paper that we published in Blood in 2024, if you read nothing else, the tables in the back are so useful in terms of CRS and ICANS management. Print them out, stick them to your corkboard in your office, and they're very, very helpful to kind of guide you through, what to do in those scenarios.
I'm going to ask a follow-on question. What are your thoughts on the prophylactic use of Tosi for CRS management posted in the Q&A?
So one thing I want to be really, really clear on is that there seems to be this belief, depending on where you're at, that prophylactic Tosi can be used with every bispecific in all disease states. And I almost want to shout it from the mountaintops, please no. In multiple myeloma with teclistamab and talquetamab, we have data, actual published data that recognizes the benefit of prophylactic tocilizumab in these drugs, showing, a substantial reduction in CRS when used, and to the point that it's made the NCCN guidelines. Now, insurance companies don't always care what's in the NCCN guidelines, but it's there. So when appropriate in multiple myeloma, a patient that you're doing outpatient. Now, I would say if it's your first multiple myeloma patient and you're going to do outpatient, try and get the Tosi approved. Word of just to help, always put it in when you go to get the regimen approved by the insurance company, build it in right away. Don't get the drug approved and then add it in, because typically what they're going to do is deny it and you'll have to put the biosimilar in. And then you'll get it covered. But it cuts down on CRS by like 50%. I mean, it is huge, to the point that myeloma trials now are, in some cases building it in. We built it into budgets to get done for myeloma, which is huge for trial. But I think it's a great tool. I think that it's an emergency kit, type of thing to use when you're treating a myeloma patient. A lot of community sites tend to start with myeloma drugs, and it's definitely something that I think is useful. I also think hydration is key. I can't say this enough. I mean, patients do not drink enough, and so hydrating, 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 especially when you're using like tarlatamab for not sorry for small cell lung cancer. We don't have. I know we're. I don't want to get into the solid tumor base, but we don't have all the the tools that we do in our hematology or malignant hematology patients. And so hydration is key.
Maybe another question along those lines. How do you overcome the US label when it requires or recommends hospitalization for monitoring?
So if you look at the PI for a lot of our drugs, it's not mandatory. There are a few products in which are mandatory, but most of them are strongly consider, and there's this sort of disclaimer of, if you are, if your site is, blah, 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 just use with caution. But if a patient has a CRS event, please admit for subsequent doses. So that is something to keep in mind. I will tell you that I know a lot of us have done outpatient when it has not been perfectly laid out in the label, but they are loosening. Trials are loosening their requirements. And if you can show experience, SOP, things like that, a lot of times they'll kind of loosely waive that, but just stress that if there's a grade two, a severe grade two event, you must admit, which goes without saying.
Maybe the last question. This is shifting gears a little bit, but do you approach the CRS and maybe neurotoxicity? I'll kind of expand on the question posted similarly with large cell lymphoma. And then the question, sorry, large cell and CAR T administered treatment. And specifically, the question is, do you consider prophylactic Tosi in that space?
So again, with our large cell lymphoma patients, there are prophylactic TOCI in a CAR T patient, it's different, right? So you don't necessarily, so no, the answer is no. It took us years to feel okay to do, Dex, early intervention with Dex, with CAR T. So no, that is not something that we routinely do, and until we have to use data to make decisions like that. And so we don't want to, bispecific is off the shelf, it's using your own immune system, but CAR T is relying on T cell expansion and a lot of different factors. And so we don't necessarily want to do something that could potentially take away from our desired result. So no, not no prophylactic tocilizumab in CAR T in any disease state at this point in time. For CAR T, specifically for CAR T.
Yes, I think you, again, you have a wealth of knowledge, and I really appreciate you allowing us to kind of pick your brain on this. And I think you raise a lot of really important points that you have to consider the disease, consider the therapy, consider the data that's out there. But I also recognize that a lot of these community practices, when you're dealing with heme malignancies, these are really rare, infrequent events. And so balancing that with generating a protocol that allows them to, again, operationalize some of these therapies, I think having experts like you is sort of unmatched, and being able to learn from, the knowledge you can share to help inform those practices. So again, I really appreciate your time today. I appreciate the audience for chiming in and asking questions. And I welcome everybody to join me next month on March 18th, 2:30 to 3 Central Time. I'm speaking with Dr. Jeffrey Mattous from Colorado Blood and Cancer Institute. We're going to be talking about how do you manage access to novel therapies in community setting. And again, Dr. Graf, really appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having me. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.